Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for listening. Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm glad you're here. 1-866-408-7669. In 12 minutes, I'll be able to take some of your calls, so get in line. Or you can write me, briankilmeade.com, and hope to see everyone in Indianapolis June 29th and July 27th. I'll be in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania with the History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour, and I think you're going to love it. If you love this country and you're patriotic, I hope to see you in person, meet and greet opportunities too. A lot going on today. Listen to this. Merrick Garland's going to be speaking, trying to defend himself and saying that the Department of Justice is not weaponized. Good luck with that. I can't wait to hear what he has to say. And also we have the FBI director talking about the terror threats. That'll be interesting. And the Hunter Biden trial unfolding. But that didn't even make the big three. So let's get started.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We lose our credibility if we don't talk about, as if they're not going to notice Biden's old. I think it's a moot point at this point. Okay. He's going to lose. The shy Trump voter is the one who's going to vote for Trump, but doesn't want you to know it because it's a little declassé.
Bill Maher yesterday or over the weekend on HBO 2024. I shouldn't say that. It's his podcast. 2024, Biden goes on the attack in Greenwich, Connecticut, and money floods into the Trump campaign. For the second time in 2 months, the Republicans win the month in fundraising. And guess what? They are eyeing turning the blue states red. And a path there, believe, is there is a path to overwhelming electoral victory.
Number two.
Do you agree that there was a push to downplay the lab leak theory?
Not on my part.
Really?
Really? Wow.
I think most of the country would find that amazing. I still got 11 seconds.
But look at the facts. I've kept an open mind throughout the entire process.
You did not, you liar. Fauci follows you. Self-important, arrogant, overrated blowhard. Dr. Fauci didn't make any mistakes, didn't have any missteps, and is not responsible for the plethora of abusive policies during COVID-19. Yeah, right.
Number one.
We're 5 months to Election Day, and that's why the president and his team felt like they had to do something on this. Polls do show immigration remains a pretty good issue for Republicans, despite the facts of the matter. Biden and his team, they acknowledge privately, they were a little slow to act earlier in his term.
Slow to act? They acted right away to open up the border. Are you nuts? Unbelievable, but that is indeed the case on other channels. Biden broke it, and now we are to believe he wants to fix it. That's what we're going to be asked to do as he relates to the border. Today, the president is expected to roll out executive orders to attack the border he ignored that allowed millions to flow in here illegally, while one of his illegals shot two cops yesterday, a 19-year-old from, drumroll please, Venezuela, an outlaw communist country that emptied their prisons in order to flood our border. And when the former president says they're sending their criminals, they're right. He is right. He was right in 2016 when he said it. And he's really right in 2024. Since that time, Venezuela's really collapsed. It let everybody out that wants to leave, that wants to give them some type of trouble. And that is, we have a lot to talk about. But let's talk about the border, because I think that's what I think it's going to be the number one issue in America, the border. And it's pretty clear that the president could be doing a lot more. I think there were 60 separate executive orders that he issued on day one, many of which had to do with the Border Patrol. And he wanted to get rid of Remain in Mexico. He wanted to stop holding back aid to the Central and South American countries that are letting their illegals flow in. He no longer pressured Mexico to keep 20,000 Marines on their southern border to protect our border. With the Remain in Mexico gone, people wearing Biden-Harris T-shirts because his rhetoric said, if you're a refugee, you should be able to come to America. And then when asked to reinstate it, he said, I have no power. Cut one.
That's all I can do. Give me the power. I've asked for the very day I got in office. Give me the border control. Give me the people, the judges. Give me the people who can stop this and make it work for us.
You crazy. Now, by the way, the Speaker of the House told us on this very show that he went up, called up Joe Biden when he got the job. He said, listen, here are the things you can do right now. Forget about legislation. Do this right now. It'll help the country. Even if it helps you politically and hurts my party, here's what you should do. And he said, no, I won't. Or he had no response. We could ask the speaker today. If you see the speaker, ask him. He campaigned on reversing the Trump policy. He campaigned on being welcoming. And he got what he wanted. And we got what we didn't want. Not just is Texas, New Mexico, and California and Arizona being flooded. We were willing to tolerate that, evidently. I don't think it's right, but we were. But when they started busing them to major cities, Chicago, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and especially New York, where we still have at least 81,000 illegals here that we're supporting at the cost of billions to our city and our state, mostly our city, the one I'm broadcasting from right now. And here's what he's going to do. He's going to put a series of measures together, and he's going to say essentially this. He's going to say, if there are a number of encounters between 2,500 at the ports of entry, 2,500 at the ports of entry, with the border reopening only when it goes down to 1,500. So, if you go to encounters outside the port of entry, and there are over 2,500, and right now it's over 2,500, it's on average 6,782 a day. They will shut the border down and not reopen until the number gets down to 1,500. Here's, as I read it, here's my problem with it. You have to go around with a little clicker around in between the ports of entry. Ports of entry are easy to count. It's a toll booth. We've been counting them since the 50s. Toll booth. You roll through, you go in, number one, two, three. Hey, how are they doing in Texas? How are they doing in New Mexico, Arizona? So that would be easy to do. But it's the people that are coming through illegally that just show up across the Rio Grande, that show up in parks and towns. You go, where are you from? Well, I'm coming here. I'm a refugee. Then they got to go report. You could never get real-time numbers to shut a border down until we get to the next day. So it's never going to be accurate. You're never going to hit a threshold. And can you imagine? You're at 2,500. Sorry, shut it down. Really? Do you see what happened the last time we tried to shut the border down? Our Border Patrol got flat out overrun. Chad Wolf told me this morning he's got a huge problem with what he's read. Cut to.
They've been telling the American people that there's no crisis along that border now for 3 years. And then they've tried to convince the American people that they can't take executive action. And we've had somewhere between 10 and probably 13 million illegal aliens cross that border. And now, 5 months out from an election, now they're serious about border security.
Yeah, and guess what? Last year, 3.2 million. Now, you might be saying, where's their path to citizenship? Yeah, it's still far off. They haven't agreed to anything. But their kids become citizens. Number two, they count for the census. Now, you have a ton of illegal aliens who come into your city and your state. Suddenly, you are eligible for more congressmen and women. And usually, the stats read, not all the time, that they become Democrats. And that's why. Cut three.
There are holes in this plan. This plan does nothing to stop the asylum abuse, does nothing to stop the parole abuse that this administration has done, nothing to stop catch and release. So I see a lot of different holes here. I don't think it's going to work. It's a little too little, too late.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens when he rolls it out. It's going to be a whole blame game. Chuck Schumer likes the Langford immigration reform, and I like some elements of it too, but they just don't have any trust about enforcing the rules on the books. And yet the president will have cover and say, I did something else bipartisan. This former president said no. Now, how does all this relate to 2024? They're going to be on the debate stage together, in theory, in 3 weeks, at which time they got to kill the mics when the other one's talking. I love this. I love it, and President Trump should learn to embrace it. Maybe he does, and that's why he signed off and said, okay. So when Joe Biden said, the border was broken. It was inhumane when I got there. I tried to fix it. And when that didn't work, I took executive action because I couldn't get bipartisan agreement. The president can't just say, you broke it. But I would love to see President Trump say, here are the things that you did. Here's the things that you reversed. And when you talk about child separation, whatever you think about that, it was a deterrent. And it lasted a matter of weeks. If you want to talk about kids in cages, that was Barack Obama. That was you. And you can look it up anywhere. That was you, and you know better. How about the 84,000 unaccompanied minors that we have totally lost track of? How about the 350,000 that you have told ICE, back off, told the courts, don't worry, let them alone, let them stay. They're not alien. They're still technically aliens. They're not in fear of arrest, but they're not citizens either. What about parole? And parole bypasses the border. If you go to any of these seven separate countries and you claim refugee status, we pick you and you go on the app. We will pick you up from various locations and fly you into small airports around the country. Maybe you've seen them in Pennsylvania. Maybe you've seen them in Vermont. Maybe you've seen them on Long Island. Maybe you've seen them in Westchester, New York. Maybe you've seen them in Jacksonville. Because they're landing there. They don't tell the governors. They don't tell the mayors. Next thing you know, they show up in your kid's school. And the president needs to humanize this. Not saying people need help or a nation of immigrants. That ship has sailed. And I was pretty stunned to see that story. In the New York Times, it said, most people agree with President Trump's proposal to round up massively illegal aliens and send them home. Listen to Jonathan Lemaire of MSNBC. I guess he's forced to report this way. Cut six.
We're 5 months to Election Day, and that's why the president and his team felt like they had to do something on this. We were right to underscore, and we've been doing it consistently on this show. Republicans crafted this deal in the Senate and then walked away from it because Donald Trump wanted to keep it an election issue. Polls do show, Molly, that immigration remains a pretty good issue for Republicans despite the facts of the matter. And the president, Biden and his team, they acknowledge privately they were a little slow to act earlier in his term.
Despite the facts of the matter, because that legislation that came across after three years of a broken border, when the vice president was told, go down there and be the border czar, and she says, I only go to the root causes, had one visit to Central America, right there, you lost me. The president lost me in Afghanistan, and she lost me in that. She got a difficult assignment to control the border with lenient policies while now alienating her left-wing base. But to me, I'm just getting it right. I just do it. And if I alienate the left-wing base, I'll win over moderates and I'll make up for it. Where else are they going to go except the couch? When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about Anthony Fauci and the line that he did yesterday, or refusal to tell the truth, be transparent, show some vulnerability. Instead, he tried to paint himself the victim. And questioners, as usual, are just way off base and driven by politics. I'm not buying it. You lived it. You probably feel the same way. I'll find out when we come back. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Out of the gates and ready to go.
Hey, it's Hutton Withrow. Hot Mike is here on the Outkick Network. We've got your afternoon covered with the latest sports discussion, and it's available wherever you find your audio.
Daily analysis and news. He is hot. I am Mike. Actually, my name is Chad. His name is Jonathan. But you get the picture. We're going to bring it every single day. Whatever you want to call us, we'll respond to. We just want you to respond to what we're dishing out every day.
And while you're here, we hope you're subscribed to the podcast. Like, subscribe, and share.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
You believed an institutional should make it hard for people to live their lives so they'd feel pressured to get vaccinated. Could we run the audio clip on that, please?
Do you think can be done about it? I have to say that I don't see a big solution other than some sort of mandatory vaccination.
You want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Big corporations like Amazon and Facebook and all of those others are going to say, you want to work for us, you get vaccinated. And it's been proven that when you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological and they get vaccinated.
See, that's the Anthony Fauci. That's the guy behind the scenes with the arrogant policies who comes off like everybody's uncle or friendly grandfather, but he's really a blowhard, self-important egomaniac. He is going to make you get vaccinated to keep your job. He's going to make you get vaccinated in order to go to school and maybe play a sport. He's going to make you wear a mask outdoors in the middle of your lacrosse game, your soccer game, your football game. I know. When he would find out months later that we'd all find out that outdoors you can never get COVID. That's not the way he was transferred. He'd tell you not to wear a mask. It does no good. And then he'd say, of course you wear a mask. And then later he said, I only said that because we didn't have any masks. I didn't believe him the first time. I don't believe his explanation. And he knows damn well what these masks are made of. These guys live in these masks. Outside Michael Jackson, the average person never wears a mask up until this pandemic. And instead of saying, you know, this is what we thought, this is what we did, this is what we thought, this is what we did. Instead, we have a guy running from every policy. Here's more from Dr. Rich McCormick, who is in the Army too. Cut 11.
Any dissent surrounding COVID-19 treatments, mask mandates, and any public policy surrounding the pandemic was immediately labeled as anti-science. I watched as public health officials and politicians told my patients what treatment options were best for them, regardless of their comorbidities or their medical history. Despite my education and my training and my experience, my opinions were relegated to conspiracy and misinformation by so-called healthcare experts.
So please tell me you remember that he called anybody who said it leaked from a lab a conspiracist. Remember that Jon Stewart, and I'll pull it back at some point today, was the one who went on Stephen Colbert and said basically in a funny way, of course it came from the Wuhan lab. Let me see, a novel virus from a novel virus lab, the Wuhan lab, where it started? Or no, it was a platypus that bit a bat. Of course. And that sobered everybody up. A comedian, smart one, but a comedian was the one who made everybody look at this and push back on Anthony Fauci. Because when we said it on Fox or anywhere else, you were considered a fringe person looking to kill people, right? Talk about dividing the country. Remember how this divided the country? So listen to this. Now when asked about a possible lab leak, and one of the controversies is, and we can't find it yet, but was he funding a lot of the experimentation that gave us this global pandemic? Was American taxpayer dollars funding it? Certainly not Anthony Fauci himself. Cut 12.
As you sit here today, is it possible that COVID-19 was the result of a laboratory-related accident?
Oh, absolutely. And I keep, like I mentioned multiple times, I keep an open mind. I feel, based on the data that I have seen, that the more likely, not definitive, but the more likely explanation is a natural spillover from an animal reservoir. But since there has not been definitive proof one way or the other, we have to keep an open mind that it could be either.
Ugh. And based on that answer, I think, is the hypothesis that COVID-19 accidentally leaked from a lab a conspiracy theory?
No, I mentioned that several times. Conceptually, the concept of it is not a conspiracy theory.
What a clown. And when you brought up things, even in the medical profession, you were marginalized. They know that they were doing gain-of-function research. They know that even Barack Obama was, what the hell are you doing? You're not going to do that here. So they funded it elsewhere. And 99% logic tells you it came right from that lab, and they had no idea it was about to hit us. They didn't have the PPE. They didn't have the vaccine, of course. They didn't have the testing, of course. Robert Redfield's been blamed now for everything that's gone wrong. You remember, he was the one who was with the Trump administration, who was ignored by Anthony Fauci, who became somewhat of a rock star in certain circles because he does know how to communicate. And then when they talked about 6 feet apart, he goes, yeah, I had nothing to do with that. That was CDC. Really? You never pushed back on that? No, it's not my case. It's not my place to push back on it. Really? Was it your place to push back with him on the President of the United States when it was Donald Trump? You bet. You did that often. And you talked later on Rachel Maddow's show how it put me in an awkward spot having to push back on the president, but I did it. And Rachel Maddow, he wouldn't let me on your show, but you're my favorite. Why would you love Rachel Maddow's show unless you were a left-wing political hack? Nothing wrong with that, but just let it be known that you're playing politics every day with our lives, destroying businesses.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. With me right now, if you're smart enough to be watching in studio, watching on the app, click on watch and just go over until you see Fox News Radio, is Dr. Casey Amin, Stanford-trained physician and co-founder of Levels, a health technology company that is striving to address what they call the world's metabolic health crisis and co-author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Good Energy, The Surprising Connection Between Metabolism and Limitless Health. And Dr. Casey Means joins us now. I see you in person now, and your brother I saw last 2 weeks ago. And one of your best advertisements for your book is that you both look so healthy. I mean, that's one of the things.
As do you.
Right. Oh, thank you. But I didn't write a health book. But I think it always helps when someone writes a book and says, this is what's going on, and you subscribe to it.
Thank you.
And you, just to give people some background before we get to your book, for you, you're going through, you're becoming a doctor. Your brother wasn't.
Yeah.
So you're going, and you were describing what it was like that you were going through. You went all the way through your residency, and what were you discovering that disillusioned you along the way?
Yeah, 4 years Stanford Medical School, 4.5 years of head and neck surgery residency. I'm 9 years into training, and I look around me and I realize, you know, I've kind of been in this tunnel vision, like this is the answer, conventional medicine is the answer. But I look around me at the trends. I'm you know, cutting into people all day long, and Americans are getting sicker every year. We're spending $4.3 trillion on healthcare costs, and Americans are getting sicker every single year, Brian. Life expectancy is going down in the United States.
Even since the pandemic? I thought the pandemic was the reason for that.
The pandemic is not the reason. It started having a sustained decline before the pandemic. The longest period of decline of health since 1860s. We are going down. So we extended lifespan in the early 1900s due to infectious disease control. Now it's going down because of chronic lifestyle conditions rooted in metabolic dysfunction. And 93% of American adults now have metabolic dysfunction tied to food and lifestyle. So that's what's killing us now. It's not the infectious diseases. It's these lifestyle diseases based on our toxic food system, our sedentary lifestyle, our poor habits.
So what's metabolic dysfunction? How do you define that?
Yeah, so metabolic health is basically the core foundational process in our bodies that make energy. We have 40 trillion cells. They all need energy to function. All the chemical reactions happening in our body need energy. That all bubbles up into our lives. That's the core of metabolic health. You remember from high school biology, the mitochondria, powerhouse of the cell, that's metabolism. Right now, because of basically every aspect of our modern Western world, our toxic ultra-processed food system, we're sitting all the time, we're sleeping 25% less than we were 100 years ago. There's 80,000 synthetic toxins in our food, water, air, personal care products. Our emotional health and stress is poor, through the roof. All of those are hurting our metabolic health. And so we have this problem where literally research from the American College of Cardiology says that 93% of Americans have this fundamental problem in how we power our bodies, the most foundational part of health. And that we know now, the science is telling us, that leads to cancer, type 2 diabetes, obesity, stroke, fatty liver disease, cancer, all of the conditions that are going up all at once. And everyone's waving their hands saying, we have no idea why. The science is telling us exactly why. It's because we have this fundamental problem in our bodies tied to food and lifestyle.
Colon cancer too is up, isn't it? On younger people.
In young people going up. This is the first year in history that we are expected to have over 2 million new cases of cancer in the United States. So we are throwing money at cancer research, and cancer rates are going up. The reason for this is because we're focusing on the symptoms of cancer. We're focusing on treating cancer after it develops. We spend virtually $0 on cancer prevention. We know that much cancer, especially colon cancer, is tied to our terrible ultra-processed diets in the United States. So, you know, there's plausible deniability. We're working so hard, but the rates are going up. We don't know why. We do know why. It's because of the environment that we're living in. And unfortunately, there's trillions and trillions of dollars of incentives between this devil's bargain of the food system and the healthcare system that both make money when we're addicted to crappy food and then we're getting treatment. And so, you know, I think the thing that people really need to understand is that the financial incentives of our healthcare system right now, they make more money when patients are sick, and it makes less money when patients are healthy. That's why I had to leave the system, because that is the financial reality of the American healthcare system.
But are there grand secret, higher up meetings behind closed doors among the rich and the powerful in the medical profession and the big pharma that say we're going to keep Americans sick in order to make money? Are they in cahoots?
You know, I mean, it's hard to say, right? I haven't been in those rooms. I know that there is about $6 trillion invisible hand that totally benefits off of us being sick. $4.3 trillion of healthcare costs, and then over $2 trillion of ultra processed food system. In the 1980s, three of the four biggest mergers that happened were cigarette companies acquiring ultra processed food companies. So like Philip Morris acquiring Kraft. So we know that there's some understanding there about addiction as a business model, right? That's what's happening with ultra processed foods. They're following the exact same playbook as cigarettes. So, you know, I can't say, but I think that you've got a really, really big incentive problem that benefits off sick, dependent Americans. And we have to be aware of that.
John Stewart was on filling in on Two Bears and One Cave podcast yesterday, and he talked about this. Cut 38.
Even if you look at food stamps, right? So food stamps ostensibly is like a pretty good program. Like people, first of all, there shouldn't be food insecurity in a country as rich as this. Like,
right.
That's just ridiculous. But the really strange part of it to me is food stamps are really a subsidy to like Kraft or Nabisco or the giant food conglomerates, because the majority of the foods that people are buying are these ultra processed box foods. They're going to sodas and foods that go right into PepsiCo. Like, we don't do anything that doesn't have a middleman with a corporate owner to it. So all that government money goes, it's really their subsidies. Like, why is there corn syrup and everything? It's government just paying farmers for, and then they're just giving the corn syrup and fructose to, and so what do? They give us all diabetes, and then what's the next step?
Yeah.
Big pharma comes in, and now you're in the cycle.
Yeah.
They're literally combating the drug of ultra-processed food with the drugs from big pharma.
And Casey, you're nodding along.
They nailed it. This is why I left the system to become an evangelist for root cause health. Right now, SNAP, which is the largest federal assistance program for food, you've also got WIC for mothers and children. It is in many ways, because of a rigged system, because we are allowed to buy soda on SNAP. SNAP is the number one line item on SNAP. Okay, soda is diabetes water. Soda has no nutritional value and causes chronic disease. Mm-hmm. 10% of all SNAP funding goes towards soda, which means it is essentially money laundering from American taxpayers to ultra-processed food companies to keep people, especially people who are minorities and the poor, sick. This is a rigged system. People say, oh, if we control what people buy on SNAP, it's a nanny state. You know, that's overreach of the government.
But you are. But by definition, you're providing food for people that need it. So, of course, you could control what they have.
Right. I mean, what if we could incentivize people buying healthy fruits and vegetables to keep them healthy?
Why is it more expensive to get healthy stuff?
It's more expensive because of our farm bills. Again, this is a second tier of the rigged system. Our farm bills financially subsidize, again, taxpayer money for commodity crops like corn, wheat, and soy, most of which go towards animal feed for large-scale animal production operations, not healthy beef, the bad beef that comes from these confined animal feeding operations where they're, you know, in squalor. The farm bills are going to the process. So the grains that go towards animal feed and ultra processed foods, that corn, mm-hmm. It's not going to a beautiful piece of corn you're throwing on your grill. It's going to high fructose corn syrup, which is essentially makes sugar cheaper than, in many cases, water. You walk into a convenience store, soda is cheaper than water because taxpayers are paying for it.
Casey Means is here. The name of her book, the number one book in the country right now, is called Good Energy. So, and she's a doctor. Dr. Means, let me ask you this. What about people that push back and say, we're looking to put these preservatives in order to preserve food so it can last longer? Is that a good argument?
It's an argument that's been used. It's not a good argument. When we look at processed food with preservatives in it, it has virtually no nutritional value. If you actually look at spinach straight out of the ground, it has tons of vitamin C. You process it, it has 0 milligrams of vitamin C in it. So we're basically just giving people this essential. People are overfed and undernourished in our country. And what we need to do is put our innovation and our dollars towards helping people get access to fresh food.
What would pressure the system to change?
Oh.
It would be awareness and people boycotting this and stuff. And for example, I used to hear this a lot when I was in California. After the riots in 92, yeah. Was it? They said, you know, they're poisoning our working class areas by putting nothing but fast food in our areas and a lot of liquor stores. And I thought, well, that's because people want that in that area. But no, that came first.
Yeah.
And then came the customer. So we could somehow reverse that.
Yeah.
right? And yeah. I don't want to – look, fast food has a place. I don't want to drive people out of business. But if people were only buying things that were healthy, fast food would change.
Yeah. The incentives come first, then the behavior comes. I think that's a really key point. If we simply changed what people could buy on SNAP and incentivized fresh fruits and vegetables, we'd eliminate food deserts because the commerce is going to follow the incentives. Right now, it's cheapest to serve people – the ultra-processed grains, the seed oils, the ultra-processed sugar. That's the basically what the backbone of fast food, right? If we changed SNAP, if we changed the farm bill, simple incentive shifts, it would change everything.
How many people are on this? A lot of people on food stamps?
Huge amount.
So you could really make a difference by changing the basics in SNAP and food stamps?
Absolutely, and the farm bill, yeah. But there's many other layers to it from a policy standpoint, simple policies that would change a lot. Right now, the USDA school lunch program serves 3 billion meals per year to children.
Okay.
And it is totally corrupted by big food.
I thought Michelle Obama straightened that out.
Absolutely not. There was just a brokered deal between Kraft and the USDA school lunch program to put Lunchables in schools.
Does Kraft do anything to have the nutritional value in it?
No. I mean, this food is ultra-processed Frankenfood filled with chemicals, artificial dyes, preservatives that really shouldn't be touching a child's body. Children in America right now are really suffering. You have 40% of 18-year-olds with a mental health diagnosis. You have cancer rates and heart disease. Literally, we're seeing hypertension, high blood pressure in kids, and 30% of teens, Brian, have prediabetes.
So I always go back and forth. I never put them together. What are we feeding them? And also, why are they so inactive? Because of their phones, the Xbox. People worried about playing outside, unscripted playing doesn't happen.
Nope.
But you're saying it's all part of it. You got the foods a part of it. It'd also be great to get kids more active.
Yeah. Right? I think it's a big societal shift that's happened. You know, this gets kind of out there, but you get women outside of the home. You know, you tell people that climbing the corporate ladder is the only way to have value in America, right? So you have no one actually thinking about or preparing food in the country. Then you've got kids basically eating convenience food. Kids are getting sick. Now they're on a dopamine loop where they're addicted to sugar and they're addicted to processed foods. That, of course, predisposes them more to being addicted to their devices, their phones, video games, social media. So you've basically got this destruction of the, in many ways, I think, the foundation of American family life, where kids are not eating meals with their parents anymore. Only 30% of Americans are eating more than 3 meals together per week. So it's just all about convenience. And unfortunately, on many levels, I think what would solve a lot of this is people getting back to the basics, like buy real food that is grown close to your home, eat meals with your family, prepare food together.
So, Casey, stick around.
Yeah.
Because when we come back, I want to talk about Ozempic all these other miracle drugs that some people are saying have changed their lives. And other people are saying we're still trying to find out what it's about. You have definite opinions on this and you're ready to go.
Yes.
All right. So stay tuned. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're also watching a few things that are happening right now. We know the Hunter Biden trial has started. We're tracking that. If things have happened, they actually went out and they picked a jury in one day. Opening arguments begin. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back. The author of one of the authors of Good Energy, The Surprising Connection Between Metabolism and Limitless Health. The number one book in the country right now is here back with us, Dr. Casey Means, who was kind enough to come on One Nation 2 weeks ago. And the book it remains number one in the country on the New York Times list. So when we left, we talked about Ozempic. And you know, we were talking about Ozempic, the magic pill, the week before.
Yeah.
Now, you have a different feeling about Ozempic, Wegovy, and everything else.
Yeah, I think what we really need to understand is that obesity, this fat that we're literally just 3D printing on our bodies in America, 75% of Americans overweight or obese now. It's 100 years ago, if you had obesity, you were in the circus. Like, literally, it didn't really exist. People need to recognize that. This is a new phenomenon. It's not a genetic issue. This is the lifestyle we're leading, the food we're eating. It's the environment causing us to be metabolically dysfunctional and therefore 3D print all this fat. Ozempic comes in and says, oh, we'll melt your fat for you and everything will be great. It's a magic pill. But unfortunately, without changing the environment, we're not actually creating health. We can melt some fat, but are we truly becoming healthy? That's the question. And so we're kind of being gaslighted to think that a shot for life, it's a weekly injection you have to take for life, can somehow ameliorate the effects of an environment that is just crushing our health on every level. Johan Hari, you spoke with him on your, you know, show.
On this show and on TV.
Yeah. And he says that Americans, that, yeah, of course the drug has side effects. Of course it's got problems. But we have two choices. We deal with the consequence of obesity or we deal with the consequences of the drug. We actually have a third choice, Johan. We can actually just eat real food and clean up our environment and our bodies will naturally become a healthy weight. There are many people who make simple, simple changes focused on metabolic health, and they lose a drastic amount of weight. So we have more than two choices in this. And unfortunately, because there's so little incentive for doctors to talk to patients about healthy food and lifestyle, and we're so laser focused on pharmaceuticals.
They don't know much about it.
They don't know
much. You are a doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, you are a doctor.
80% of medical schools do not have a single class on nutrition, even though 90% of healthcare costs right now are going toward conditions tied to food.
Why is that? Why is that? Why wouldn't they put nutrition? I'm sure there's a natural curiosity for a doctor.
You have to follow the money. You know, I think that the way that our healthcare system is financed right now, the way doctors and hospitals and insurance companies and pharmaceuticals all make money is have more patients in the system utilizing services for a longer period of time. This is why chronic disease, which is a new phenomenon over the past 50 to 100 years, that's why it's such a cash cow.
So you are not for Ozempic and all these others?
No, Ozempic is a Band-Aid. Ozempic is a Band-Aid. And right now, the parent company, Novo Nordisk, which is based in Denmark, in Europe, it has surpassed Louis Vuitton, LVMH, to become the largest company in Europe. They are profiting off the broken healthcare and food system in the United States. And there's an all-out war, an all-out effort right now to classify obesity as a genetic disease. Because if we do that, then we can have Ozempic covered by insurance. And if we have Ozempic covered by insurance, then we can have taxpayer money going towards it. And what that will, and this is actually up in Congress right now, this exact topic. If that happens, if Medicare starts covering this for overweight and obesity, we will essentially be funneling potentially hundreds of billions, if not eventually trillions of dollars every year from the U.S. to Denmark to a Danish company to basically put a Band-Aid on an issue caused by our broken system.
And then guess what? All of America will be paying for it because all our insurance rates are going to go higher because now we have to digest, pun intended, this new drug.
And I'm not convinced it's actually going to make people healthy over the long term, because if our environment stays the same, the ultra-processed food, the chronic stress, the not moving much at all, we will still have
problems.
Casey,
where should we shop? Is Whole Foods the place to shop?
The best possible place to shop is the farmer's market, 100%. Whole Foods is great. We want to do organic. We spray 50 billion pounds of glyphosate pesticides all over our food each year. It's basically toxin. We want to get the cleanest food possible from the best soil. There are 9,000 farmer's markets in the United States. It's going to give you the best nutrients. And we'll make you feel full because it's filled with nutrients.
And in those working class areas, put those farmer's markets. It'll help everybody.
Put the farmer's markets. Whatever you can do, eat real food.
All right, whatever you do, pick up her book. Yeah, expand on it. Good Energy, the surprising connection between metabolism and limitless health. Dr. Means, thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, where sadly we had two cops shot by, guess this, drum roll please, a Venezuelan illegal immigrant who came through our southern border, was supposed to be in Chicago on May 6th, ends up shooting a cop when he was caught in the action of a criminal act, and had no problem doing it. And after he shot him, he still had to be dragged into arrest. Thankfully, both those cops lived, but it brings us to the bigger story. One of the things we're going to be talking about this hour with Pete Hegseth is that, as well as his brand new book, which is now out today. And also, we're going to be tracking a myriad of things that are happening. By the way, the name of Pete's books is The War on Warriors, Behind the Betrayal of the Men Who Keep Us Free. And Pete's in studio. We're also glued to this in the break. The President of the United States today is going to be talking about executive orders to fix the border because he said Republicans don't want to, which is the biggest joke. There'll probably be a laugh track at the presser. But right now, Republicans are trying to get in front of it, Senator John Kennedy, Senator John Cornyn, Lindsey Graham, and others, to say, are you kidding me? You busted this thing through executive order. This has to be by design. You see that it's the number one issue in America. You see that this country is now for mass deportation, let alone building the wall. And now they say, well, we were with you all the time. So Pete Hegseth joins us now, and a little bit later we'll be on with Stuart Varney to do a simulcast. Pete, great to see you. Congratulations on the book.
Hey, Brian. Of course, this is my first radio interview for the book. I would go nowhere else.
How many people have you turned down that wanted to be your first?
A lot of people.
Right. And, like, you can't name any right now.
Like Mark Levin.
Mark
I said,
Levin.
Mark, hold on.
Right.
I got to do Brian Kilmeade.
And by the way, he would take that well if you ever thought to say that. I saw you on Sunday. Great job.
He was
selling the book.
Kind.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's does a great job, and he's on board. Well, you interviewed him for his book.
Yeah. It's mutually.
On his show.
Yes. It's weird when you take over someone else's show and then interview them about their book. Right, but he can do it.
Yeah. First, I'd like to talk about this because we have 40 yeah. minutes of quality time together, which I know Jen, your wife, is jealous of.
Very much
right
so.
Because she does not get 40 minutes with you.
No,
you're
this
in two
is the
locations,
hour we had to
seven
be
kids.
Yeah, and you took it.
But Senator Kennedy now speaking now. Do you think possibly, not think for Pete Hegseth, but think in the big picture with 200 million people in America eligible to vote, do you think possibly anyone's buying the fact that Republicans are stopping immigration reform?
No, but what the White House is counting on is stemming the tide enough that it's not on the front page of the newspaper or in the A block of news shows that people watch by the time September, October, November comes around. This is only a cynical political ploy by Democrats. Biden's already cut a deal with AMLO down in Mexico. They've effectively – he's had leverage for a long time to say, hey, I can stem the tide too, and that helps you out. So they've already been trying to slow the flow. No one's going to believe that this is a serious attempt to stop what's been happening at the border, because it's came so late. It came after they said they didn't have the power. It came after they scrapped every single thing that Trump had done that had worked. So no, it won't. I don't get it. I guess they just know how bad it is politically for them, and they're going to try to take it off the front page.
I mean, they'll try. And you have Senator Schumer here with all his power, got two issues: anti-Semitism raging in New York City, and he also has illegal immigrants taking over New York City, costing us billions of dollars. You would think the most powerful Jewish American in the country, in our history, we'd be using some of that leverage, some of that power to say you're destroying cities with the movement of these illegals to major cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, but most of all New York. But he's not.
What is he using it on, actually? I don't know what
energy drinks.
Is that what it is?
He comes out against energy drinks, Zin. Mm. He came out against Zin.
So he's going the Michael Bloomberg route, the
right.
nanny state route.
Right. Well, yeah, it works so well. Although we do long for Bloomberg days. At least there was some type of
it did look wonderful back
organization.
Then,
yes. But last year, in terms of illegal immigrants, we had 3.2 million illegal immigrant encounters at the border. Now, on average, we had 8,770 a day. Now he says he's going to shut it down if there's any over 2,500.
First of all, I don't believe that. They're going to be lagging.
How do you
numbers.
Do it? Is there
how
a
do
big
count?
Bell?
Where's the count? When do you throw the gauntlet down and stop it? You don't. It's all fake. Remember, Jay Johnson was on your program saying multiple times, 1,000 encounters a day was a catastrophe. Now we're content with anything south of 2,500. And all they want to avoid is the summer of Bidenville, of illegals stuck under a bridge, and the visuals of Bill Malusian and Griff Jenkins on the border covering it wall to wall. Make no mistake, that's all they're trying to avoid. And they won't be able to completely avoid it because they can't shut the border down.
And one thing Trump did say is, I don't want this done. One of the main reasons is he doesn't like the legislation. Number two is, we got one shot at this. They're not going to redo immigration reform.
That's right.
He thinks he's going to win. And he says, I'm going to do it. I know how to do it. And he'll probably get the first time, so different from 2016. He'll get Democratic support, I believe, to get this passed.
I don't think – I mean, remember, TDS is a real thing. Yes, there are political implications here, but you will get some reasonable Democrats.
Although Manchin
cinema
left.
It. Yeah, but it's still going to – it's going to be as partisan as it's ever been, Brian, even on an issue like this, because they're going to stand and say, we had a bill you could have voted on. It was reasonable. It was strong. It was tough. Trump obviously didn't like that bill for the right reasons. It would have tied his hands in a future administration. It's not going to be there's going to be nothing bipartisan about Trump's approach to the border in 2025. Democrats are going to call him a horrible. I mean, mass deportations. They're going to politicize and weaponize that in 10 seconds. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is going to be on the border crying at the fence like she was before, making it look like, you know, Donald Trump is the Gestapo when all he's trying to do is reinforce the rule of law. I'd like to think there's room for bipartisanship. I don't see it.
So here's what Meredith McGraw said on Special Report last night. She's from Politico, Cut 7.
This has been one of President Biden's biggest weaknesses, and his presidency has really been tied in a lot of ways to his record with the border, and he's needed to show that he can do something, anything, to show that he's taking this border crisis seriously. But we don't know what's going to be in this executive order. I imagine he's going to get pushback from progressives and from liberals.
You think?
Yes, exactly, for you know, a potential asylum. But at the same time, Republicans are going to be saying this is too little, too late. Yeah. And we'll have to see if it makes any dent in his polling, which is really underwater on this issue.
It is. And did you see the poll in the New York Times that Gallup, for the first time, the majority of the country is for mass deportations?
I did see that. Yeah. Staggering. This is one of those.
You're still cynical about might be more momentum behind it.
Still, I mean, cynical.
If you think Trump wants to finish that wall, do you think everybody stays in his way again?
I think most Democrats stay in his way. Yes, I just think the strength of the pull of the hard left on the fundraising dollars and the incentives of Democrat politicians is still more powerful than common sense solutions that that relieve the lives of their constituency. That's a sad statement to make. But they're not going to suddenly turn and be like, oh, yes, we're for a really strong border after doing nothing about a porous one. First of all, it's an admission of failure, too. This is one of those instances. It's like the Israel-Palestine issue with this White House. There's a verse in the book of Revelations where it says, you're either hot or you're cold, but if you're lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. And that's what voters are doing to Joe Biden right now. He's not pro-Israel, but he's also hasn't done everything the far left wants to do to get a ceasefire. So no one supports him. Same thing with this border issue. He didn't do anything to secure. He left it wide open, meaning sensible, common sense Americans despise his approach. And then when he goes to try to do something which will be lame and half-assed and everything, on the border here with an executive order, the far left is going to say, now you're Trump, 2.0. He can't win because he hasn't stood for anything other than himself.
So I was at Fort Liberty, formerly Fort Bragg, and I had a chance to see and I know your book, and I was reading it on the way out, and you're very down on the state of the military right now. Yep. But when I went to Fort Liberty, I could not believe the quality of people I saw there. And they said, well, Brian, that's because you got the best of the best. I mean, we have a lot of special operators there, but a lot of 20-somethings that look like triathletes and a lot of 40-somethings that don't want to give up the uniform. And the general I was with, is probably in his – just turned around 50 – and he's still the one designing most of the operations to take out ISIS around the country, around the world. But the military that you fought in 9/11, after 9/11, you believe has dramatically changed from the one we're experiencing right now in 2024.
I do. It doesn't mean there aren't great units. It doesn't mean there still aren't fantastic outfits. I refuse to call it Fort Liberty. It's an indicative of the type of emphasis and priority that they're putting on. I saw that segment. I thought you did a great job. The zip line was fun to watch.
Well, I mean, but I had to jump off a...
It was ridiculous. What these men do, what these men and women do is phenomenal. But you get almost any of these generals and colonels in a candid moment where they're willing and able to compare the military of today in standards and ethos and philosophy versus the military of, say, 15 years ago. And they will admit to you, it's different. The training courses, Ranger School, Airborne School, Air Assault School, the formal standards and other standards have all shifted. Why? Because the leadership, civilian leadership, has said, well, we need more women in this area, or we need more of this in this area. Well, men and women are different, fundamentally different. And as a result, if you want more women in an area, you have to change, or as the military likes to say, evolve the standards to make it more accessible and inclusive for everybody. That has a downward pressure effect on the utility and the capability of the unit. Or take a unit that now is going to be told in 5 years you're going to use electric tanks or electric Humvees. Well, the same quality Americans are in those vehicles, but some general somewhere bowed to a political ideologue and is pushing something they know won't work and be as effective on the battlefield. So I saw that. I know there are great people out there. I know I'm going to get pushback from people at the Pentagon but a lot of those elite units are somewhat insulated for now from some of the nonsense. You talk to the rank and file in more conventional units, and it's ubiquitous. And the inmates are running the asylum, the standards are dropping.
When did it start? Was it existing under Trump? Was it beginning to flourish under Trump?
It began in earnest under Obama, big time. It started with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that was under Clinton. So you had some of it there. But it really started in earnest under Obama when they focused a lot on the Pentagon, and they wanted to bring to heal this meritocracy, and they wanted to use it to change the environment. started with the change of women in combat. That was a big one. That was 2015. The services pushed back. The Marine Corps did a whole study, Brian, where they showed that all male units versus integrated units, male-female units, are a lot more effective. And the Secretary of the Navy at the time, Ray Mabus, just threw the study out and said, I don't care. Integrate them. And that's indicative of the mindset of when political-minded people push into units. Trump did a lot to stem the tide. Remember, he banned transgenderism in the military. Biden brought it right
where
back.
Where you come in and you we pay to for you to transfer to a different sex.
Correct. But now the whole DEI CRT thing, it's moved into the military academies.
Even though it's moving out of places in corporate America.
Fair enough. It's not as easy to move it out of top-down institutions where there's a directive and an order. So it's moving in. It's entrenched in military academies. It's entrenched in promotion philosophies, meaning it's not do we have enough qualified pilots. It's do we have enough Black pilots? Do we have enough female pilots? Do we have enough trans? These are the types of things that commanders are asking those questions, which a question by a commander is actually an order. And so the unit starts to change who it's promoting and why. None of that has anything to do with fighting and winning wars. And my argument in the book is let's go back to focusing on having the most lethal force possible, not the most diverse.
And by the way, great timing on Father's Day. Because this is a perfect Father's Day book. The War on Warriors, Behind the Betrayal of the Men Who Keep Us Free. Pete Hegseth has a book out. It just came out. It comes out today.
Came out today.
So if you pre-order it, check your inbox. It's there or it's on its way. So, Pete, don't move. We're going to talk some more about this when we come back because we also have a cut. We have two conflicts, hot conflicts right now, that we might soon be directly in. Also, we tried to build a platform outside Gaza. Didn't really work out too well. We never thought it would be stormy. Don't miss a minute. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
No, this was an Israeli proposal. We have every expectation that if Hamas agrees to the proposal, as was transmitted to them, an Israeli proposal, that Israel would say yes. Again, well, all you get in a yes right now, George, and it's not a small thing, but what you get is the start of phase one. So you get some hostages coming out, initial hostages. You get some calm. You get some more humanitarian assistance, maybe up to 600 trucks. And then the two sides can start talking about phase two.
That is Admiral Kirby talking about the peace deal that it was originally the Israelis. It wasn't. And it was about a deal that they're jamming down Israel's throat. And they actually came out with this statement last week, Joe Biden. Hamas is no longer the threat it was. Therefore, let's talk about a ceasefire that can turn into something permanent. And using taxpayer dollars, we have to begin to rebuild Gaza. It is sickening. Pete Hegseth knows it. He joins us now. His book is now out. It's called The War on Warriors, Behind the Betrayal of the Men Who Keep Us Free. Your thought about this, Admiral Kirby's statement, the president demanding that this come to an end.
Admiral Kirby strikes you as a smart guy. You wonder how much he knows he's just lying about this. I mean,
Hamas. Kind of you to say you wonder. Admiral knows.
You have to know. This is Hamas's plan. Hamas loves the plan. It's a plan built for Hamas. Joe Biden spun it as if it was Israel's idea when no one, you know, you and I both know people inside Israel who are dialed into politics. This was nobody's idea. This is nobody's desire. Everyone wants the hostages back. That's no doubt. But if you hand over a ceasefire that effectively is indefinite, don't allow Israel to finish the job, and then phase two is an end to the war and America takes refugees and helps rebuild. That's not a plan. That's how you get perpetual war. This is a big part of the book, and I'm not trying to just plug the book, The War on Warriors. The reason why our wars went on for 20 years in Iraq and Afghanistan is we were never truly allowed to finish them. And in Israel, we know there's 4,000 at least Hamas fighters in Rafah that, you know, multiple brigades that Israel would like to kill or capture, preferably kill, and in doing so, completely eradicate the opportunity for Hamas to rebuild. And they're being told no, which means they won't be killed, which means they will reconstitute, which means they are the most powerful aspect of Gaza, and the war will continue.
So here's the thing. You want this to end, but you're making them slow down.
Correct.
So you're going to have, they're going to go into Rafah. You know the Israelis better than I do. You've been there a number of times. You've done features on it. It's all on Fox News.
They will do it.
So they have to go in, but you're making them go in a way in which they're not comfortable. I believe they wanted to come in from two separate sides with two separate divisions, just take the whole place. They go, you got to be kidding me. We will not sign off on that. But now they're moving slowly, which is elongating everything, bringing more pictures that they don't want. And their discovery, it makes it harder in the IDF to actually do it this way, too. They're going to lose more guys.
You're exactly right, Brian. Why are we doing this? Why are we dictating the terms of another country's war?
You mean General Biden doesn't have experience doing this?
Oh, you mean double face shield Lloyd Austin isn't just nailing it right now? The guy's a joke. C.Q. Brown, I read about him in the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. He's no better than Mark Milley. He's no combat warrior. So they're doing the bidding of politicians as they've always done. That's how they got promoted. And they Austin had the audacity to try to lecture the Israelis about counterinsurgency, clear, hold, build. How'd that work for us? How'd that work out in Iraq and Afghanistan? I'm proud of what my generation did. It's not on us. But we're going to lecture the Israelis about how to conduct urban warfare. By the way, their operation, at least at the beginning, will be studied for how much they bent over backwards to avoid civilian casualties. The normal ratio is 9-1 civilian deaths. There's a 1-1 based on Hamas's numbers.
And you remember when we had the numbers I gave you 3 weeks ago that I was able to get, and I'm sure you had them.
You shared them with me, Brian.
Yeah, and I said, just take a look at this. The casualties are high, but most of them are Hamas fighters, and they're not civilians. And plus, how do you know the difference?
Exactly.
You know, how the hell do you know the difference?
And they want them to be the same on the other side.
And all I see is those people cheering as those hostages were brought into Gaza. And all those people cheering, you're marked for death. You were cheering the enemy.
You should kill them all.
Yeah, and that's how I feel. And
every Hamas fighter.
By the way, they know that. We're pretending as if we don't know that.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The gun trial could expose personal, embarrassing details of the Biden family's private life. A major distraction for President Biden as he fights for re-election.
This is a historic case, but it is also a sad and sordid tale of drug addiction and its consequences in the Biden family, as in so many American families. And it carries the very real potential of personal and political pain for the president.
What's to follow in the trial of Hunter Biden will be both mundane and at the same time deeply personal and potentially deeply embarrassing for the defendant.
My heart goes out to the Biden family and the crack-addicted son who everyone denied was his laptop to reveal one of the most horrific lifestyles, hedonistic lifestyles in the history of man. I mean, I never even think it could exist like that, but this guy not only survived, he thrived, making millions of dollars. And then, by the way, it played a major role in the election because if we knew about the laptop, I'm not going to go through it now, we might have changed a lot of votes and minds in this country because people would say, do we really want to elect a president that's got all these international business connections led by his crack-addicted son? But we were told that it had nothing to do with it. Now, ironically, it's being used against Hunter Biden in a gun case, and now we want to have our hearts go out to him because he's no longer, thankfully, addicted to drugs. With me right now, Pete Hegseth. Pete, we have so many things distracting us. We got your book out that's talking about what's happening in our military. Once our greatest asset, you're extremely worried about it. That's why you wrote the book, The War on Warriors, Behind the Betrayal of the Men Who Keep Us Free. We're also watching the dynamics here as Merrick Garland tries to disabuses of thoughts that the weaponization of the justice system is taking place in America right now.
Yeah, and we're watching this trial in Delaware, which you mentioned, which
Hunter,
with a jury that looks quite favorable on the surface. You've got Jill Biden showing up in court, the wife of the president of the United States, right there in the front row, staring at that jury, the hometown jury, where that family has built, you know, a stake in controlling all things Delaware, and it's benefited them incredibly. It just count me as a little cynical that we're not going to get anything out of the Hunter trial and we're not going to get anything out of Attorney General Merrick Garland. He just had a big exchange with Matt Gaetz, where Matt Gaetz pointed out Matthew Colangelo moving from number three at DOJ to Alvin Bragg's office. They'll just deny, 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 and a complicit media won't ask anything else of it.
And it might be Matt Colangelo. Merrick Garland might not have said, Matt Colangelo, go help out Alvin Bragg, but somebody else underneath him could be, and there could be a wink and a nod. You could honestly say, I never uttered those words. They know it. They're lawyers. This guy was supposed to be a Supreme Court justice.
Or if you want your hand, all you need is, well, Jim Biden say to Tony Bobulinski, plausible deniability. That's all you ever need in these moments. And of course, they're never going to admit that he was dispatched. But if you're Merrick Garland and you really want to look like you're playing this above board, you look at Matthew Colangelo and say, you stay away from that case. Don't go from HQ to the front line of a case. They've got plenty of capable lawyers and DAs and everybody down there. They can handle it. He's clearly okay with that reality, and it turned out – I mean, you think Merrick Garland wasn't smiling behind the scenes the day that verdict was read? Of course. We all know what they're in on here.
Guess why? Because Joe Biden wasn't president, and Hillary Clinton wasn't president. Donald Trump was, and he named Gorsuch in the spot that yes. Barack Obama had named him. And Mitch McConnell said, no, I don't think so.
Best move and Mitch McConnell ever made.
In your last year, I don't think so. You're not going to put a Supreme Court justice there. Let's see what happens. And we saw what happened. Donald Trump won. Now they're trying to say Donald Trump only won because Stormy Daniels' story didn't come out. Did you see some of this coverage? I know you don't flip around. They're saying, well, the 2016 election, it wasn't the Russians. It wasn't the Russians. Now it was. If the Stormy Daniels stories got out, he never would have been elected.
I will admit to you, Brian, I haven't seen that new thread. It doesn't surprise me, though.
It is Weissman. Andrew Weissman saying that. And Andrew Weissman is obsessed with Trump. And he's obsessed saying this is this judge. He says, I have a man crush on this judge.
Oh, I did see that, yeah.
That's him. So Weissman, who called out Eli Honig of CNN, who basically called this a sham trial.
He did.
That was just stapled together. So when you have a lawyer that's just honest, I don't really care if CNN, obviously he's got money. He doesn't worry about a CNN contract because he's not going to be used much now. He came out and did it. Now they're attacking each other.
Yeah,
it's like a fight in the locker room before we could actually play him. So to your point, I wanted to bring up the William McRaven column in the Washington Post today. Mm-hmm. Admiral McRaven was a special operating commanding officer who obviously dispatched the Bin Laden raid and did some of the great things in his life. I find him fascinating. He's also a military historian. He wrote the best-selling book, Make Your Bed, Do One Positive Thing Every Day. And a great speaker, by the way. But he's anti-Trump, and I believe that he was going to be Secretary of Defense under Hillary Clinton. And he wrote a column today, and here's a few clips. And this figures into your book. I've been a vocal critic of the former president, but I take no joy in seeing him found guilty. He was the president of the U.S., my president, whether I like him or not. He has been elected by the people. Okay, your neighbors, your colleagues, your friends, your family elected him. If you're going to continue to be viewed as exceptional as a nation, this at a time for both sides to lay down the rhetorical arms and find a way to rise above. On the left, stop the gloating, the ugly memes, the public rants, the late night roastings, and political vitriol. On the right, respect the legal verdict, support the jurors, fly your flag with honor, and find a way to bridge the political divide. There are thoughtful, reasonable, genuinely good men and women on both sides. Let them speak for America. And he points out Ulysses S. Grant showed class in defeating Robert E. Lee, the way he did it, the way we rebuilt Japan under General MacArthur, who fought there, and he talked about what we did over in Germany. So indicating that this president, with his, goes on to say, we can prolong the onslaught of crassness, vulgarity, pettiness, righteous indignation, and descend into national mediocrity where there is nothing of value worth emulating, indicating move away from Trump. And I want to get your take on that.
My first take is I have no desire to read the remainder of that op-ed. I don't think he knows what time it is. I don't think you can't say you just got punched in the mouth by a rigged legal system and now it's time for everyone to put their gloves down.
And walk away from the guy that just got convicted.
And say that. In fact, the more mature approach of this has been Donald Trump, the crowds were chanting. He mentioned lock her up. That was one of the things that came out of our interview. And he said, no, I didn't. There's things that happened during a campaign. And then after the campaign, you effectively move on. Well, then they went and they're trying to lock him up and we're supposed to sit back and turn the vitriol down, according to McRaven, and everything's going to be fine. People see what has been done to our institutions and they either have to you have to fight back to preserve them. It's not a moment to play kumbaya. They think they've gained the advantage. They think they have the spots in the government is effectively controlled by McRaven types, others who will advance their own view without acknowledging that someone like Donald Trump could have a different view, that people could vote for a different view. They may want a different future. And the permanent state refuses to acknowledge that.
So Muhammad Ali was somebody who fought elegantly, danced. But, you know, people who fought him say he was vicious. And what he would do to you and finish you off, especially in the middle of his career before he didn't fight in Vietnam and then dies 3.5 years off. You looked at his face and you saw how handsome he was, but you didn't understand how vicious he was in the ring. And I think people see that Hillary Clinton and the Clintons and Obama, they look so prim and proper. They wear the part. They play the role. They speak nice. But they are vicious and they're ruthless. And I can't believe Admiral McRaven can't see it. Does he understand how to lose? Ulysses S. Grant knew how to win, and Robert E. Lee knew how to lose. Hillary Clinton launched the Russia hoax, the dossier, more vicious than any tweet or any chant. They never accepted the loss. She spent 3.5 years telling other people, everyone knows Donald Trump's an illegitimate president. The Speaker of the House ripped up a State of the Union speech. Why do all these military people who demand the president act differently than he is not see this other time in which they're just chewing up all our institutions, but they're doing it dressed nice, playing the part, going on and looking professional? And then when I see what's happened with this president's policy, did he show class in Afghanistan, not saying that not one general told him that this could happen? Nobody consulted him that this could collapse so soon? When we just have a general out with a book right now and told us in a congressional testimony that we told him everything that could happen? Was it class for him not to give the armaments on its way during the Trump administration to Ukraine ahead of time? Was it class to give an invaded country like Ukraine MREs and blankets instead of the weapons to push back the Russians that Barack Obama did? Is it class to leave the Israelis out to dry at a time when we needed them most? Yet there's one person who knows how to speak well and do the part and knows how to shake hands, and there's other ones who should be judged on their actions.
Man, Brian, I couldn't say it better myself. You're exactly right. That kind of frustration is the frustration that led me to write this book. On the same level, the book's not about how the military went woke. The book's about how the military allowed itself to go woke. That same general class that will look you in the eye and say they're in it for God and country, that raised that right hand to defend the Constitution, and then they let these things happen on their watch without throwing their stars on the table as they should have in Afghanistan.
General Milley,
without
especially
giving the advice about, you know, here's what will happen if we don't back our allies in any particular place. And if you won't, I won't stand by idly by and allow it to happen. We sort of, the niceties have propelled us into this complacency that's allowed the left to crush institutions. It's not McRaven cooperation time. It's fight back time.
Right. And Milley should have done it. He was the hero when he stood up to Trump. If he stood up to Biden, Biden knew he wouldn't have been able to pull out of Afghanistan
Absolutely.
The way he did. The War and Warriors, great book. It's going to certainly be a number one bestseller. Behind the Betrayal of the Men and Women Who Keep Us Free. Pete Hegg says, thank you. I'll see you Saturday
thank
on
you,
One
Brian.
Nation.
You got it, brother.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
And I always caution you that we have some room on the other side, so get on board. I see you out in South Bend, see you in upstate New York, 1-866-408-7669. Stuart Varney, when he does come to us, usually gives us a little air on the other side, so we'll get to that. I'm also watching a few things happening right now, explosive testimony between Merrick Garland as well as the weaponization of government committee. Matt Gaetz, I'm not a fan, but he did extremely well. And he said flat out, the Justice Department has been weaponized against
I'm
Donald Trump.
Brian, so Kilmeade. Brian, Dr. Fauci called out for downplaying the lab leak theory during his testimony on Capitol Hill. Watch this, Brian. Roll it.
Do you agree that there was a push to downplay the lab leak theory?
Not on my part.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
Wow.
I think most of the country would find that amazing. I still got 11 seconds.
Well, look at the facts. I've kept an open mind throughout the entire process.
Well, emails from Dr. Fauci in 2020 show he called the lab leak theory a, quote, shiny object that will go away. What do you make of all this, Brian?
Well, you know who actually turned it around, and he's a big critic of Fox, but Jon Stewart, when he went on Stephen Colbert's show and said basically the Wuhan a laboratory of virology right next door to where it happened. No, I think a platypus did something with a llama. And everyone laughed and they said, of course, use logic. They were afraid to stand up to him. If you went against Anthony Fauci, you might like Donald Trump. And if you agreed with Anthony Fauci, you might know for sure that you were going to be invited to all the parties to get to hang out with Joe Biden. So that's certainly, and Barack Obama, and you weren't trying to kill people. And I think about the frustration with people like Senator Ron Johnson on oversight, who was saying that what's wrong with ivermectin? What's wrong with all these other things? Why aren't you open to more of these remedies and cures, being that jamming a tube down somebody's throat and saying they need a respirator or a ventilator was killing them? People having them die alone in their hospital room was not saving us. And instead of being open to not knowing what was hitting us, they had no tests. Of course, that wasn't his fault. They had no diagnosis. They had no PPE. They didn't have the hospital beds. They didn't have anything for the doctors to wear. No responsibility for him. In fact, when it came to 6 feet apart, he blamed James Redfield. And he said, I really can't be critical of the CDC. Really? You spent your whole time being critical of the former president, but you have no problem. Now you have to worry about the CDC.
Okay, now what do you want to do? There are some congressmen who think that Fauci could be arrested. You want to go that far?
I don't care what happens to Anthony Fauci. I would love to see some humility and some transparency. I'd like to get to his emails. How about this, Stuart? How about the fact that he had an advisor he worked with for 20 years who came out, and we have text messages and emails showing he talked about a back channel. Make sure you don't keep this free from the Freedom of Information Act. When asked about it yesterday, he goes, yeah, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. He goes, he was your advisor. Well, that was his title, but he never advised me. Really? I mean, Senator Menendez throwing his wife under the bus was pretty bad. Probably the worst, but this might be the second worst. My good friend and advisor for 20 years, I don't really know what he does or what he was talking about when he talked about a back channel to me. I mean, you got to be kidding. It's so insulting.
Kilmeade fired up about Fauci. I'll move on.
He's the worst.
Stephen A. Smith, sports guy. He spoke out about the hard foul committed by Kennedy Carter on Caitlin Clark. He says race may be involved. Roll it.
There are girls, young ladies in the WNBA who are jealous of Caitlin Clark. She is a white girl that has come into the league. She has bursted onto the scene. She hasn't proven herself yet. Where the resentment comes in is the hard work, the commitment, the dedication, you know, the pounding of the pavement, and all of their efforts were in vain until this girl comes along and takes the league by storm.
You know, Brian, I don't think this is good for the WNBA. What say you?
I think you're wrong, Stuart, and here's why. We're talking about it. If she came in, averaged 11 points a game, and Indiana won 4 or 5 games, and they're 7-9. Right now, I think they've gotten 2 wins. I watched her on Saturday. I saw that hard foul in real time. Why was I watching a WNBA game? I have 2 daughters. They're both athletes. They played basketball, and they're still playing soccer in college. I love women's sports. I want only the best. This is helping. There's rivalries. There's a reason to watch. I know that Indiana has a team. I didn't even know that. I didn't know how bad they were for the last 2 years. I know Caitlin Clark, and guess what? LeBron James is on her side. I'm pretty sure he's black. Charles Barkley on his side. I'm pretty sure that he's black. And they go back to Michael Jordan not even accepting to this day LeBron James when he burst on the scene at 18. Kobe Bryant had trouble being accepted by his own teammates. I'm not sure it's black and white.
I tell you what, Brian. If I want to go and see a fight at a sporting event, I'll go to a hockey game. Kilmeade on the air with us.
I go to a fight. What do you say?
We'll see you later.
1-866-408-7669. I don't know. I was talking about this yesterday. Hope you didn't misconstrue it. I can't believe I was talking about a WNBA game on this show. Number one is sports. You guys got all sports radio choices. Number two is that I was actually in my previous job before I got to Fox. I was at a place called New Sport, and they asked all of us to get beats. And beats, like pick a sport and dominate it. And everyone's picking baseball and football, and they're vying for it. I go, no problem. I go, give me soccer, give me boxing, and give me women's basketball. And I was going out to UConn when UConn emerged, watching them sell out, Rebecca Lobo and Jen Rosati and Kara Walters. And I watched the rivalry with Tennessee and South Carolina. I was in awe. You didn't have to sell me on that. And then when the WNBA launches along with the ABL, I was watching for a little while. but there was no marketing support behind it, and we weren't getting to know these players. And what happens is soccer knows this, because they, even though the soccer is the most possible sport in the world, most popular sport in the world, in America, it's not. You got to go out to the clubs. You got to go out to the games. You got to send your players out. You got to go out to where the parents are and say, listen, come watch me play. The WNBA thought they were above it. The ABL collapsed. And then for 10 years, great players played in front of small crowds. And now big crowds are coming. Rivalries are happening. And Caitlin Clark's going to be asked to step up and play well. And if she's going to play well, people will rally to her side. It would also be great if she had some teammates to watch her back. But we're talking about it. That's why I think it helps. And, you know, black, white, go ahead. Everyone has a tough time for whatever reason, but it just makes you stronger, and maybe it'll knock down some stereotypes that exist in sports today. As usual, sports got to lead the way.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're listening. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. It's an exciting day. The FBI director is going to be testifying shortly. Right now, they're in a break, but Attorney General Garland is in front of the Weaponization of Justice Committee. And you see Jim Jordan going at it. Matt Gaetz, I'm not a fan, but he was great. Going at A.G. Garland, who denies that putting Matt Colangelo front and center in the trial against Donald Trump in a New York State case and resigning a prestigious position at the federal government to do it, that he was behind it. I doubt that. I don't know if he formally had the letter, but believe me, the wink and the nod is certainly there. And he's fighting back. Eli Beer is going to be with us at the bottom of the hour, founder and president of Friends of United Hasla. And we're going to get the latest on Israel, and Hamas. Evidently, this massive push from the U.S. to get to some type of ceasefire. So before we get to Mike Rogers, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We lose our credibility if we don't talk about, as if they're not going to notice Biden's old. I think it's a moot point at this point. Okay. He's going to lose. The shy Trump voter is the one who's going to vote for Trump, but doesn't want you to know it because it's a little declassé.
But you know what? The non-shy Trump voter, if I could say it again, is also going to vote for him. And he's in head most of the polls, but it's very tight. Biden goes on the attack in Greenwich, Connecticut, and money floods into the Trump campaign ever since he was convicted last week. We're going to talk about what could be an overwhelming electoral win if he continues to gain in New York, Virginia, as well as New Hampshire.
Number two.
Do you agree that there was a push to downplay the lab leak theory?
Not on my part.
Really?
Really? Wow.
I think most of the country would find that amazing. I still got 11 seconds.
Well, look at the facts. I've kept an open mind throughout the entire process.
Really? Dr. Fauci follies, they continue. The self-important, arrogant, overrated blowhard, Anthony Fauci, denies any mistakes, any missteps, any responsibility for the plethora of abusive policies during COVID-19.
Number one.
We're 5 months to Election Day, and that's why the president and his team felt like they had to do something on this. Polls do show immigration remains a pretty good issue for Republicans, despite the facts of the matter. Biden and his team, they acknowledge privately they were a little slow to act earlier in his term.
All right, Biden broke it, and now we're to believe he wants to fix it. That's what we're going to be asked to do as it relates to the border. Today, President Biden will roll out executive orders to attack the border he ignored and allow millions to flow in illegally to the tune of 8 to 10 million, while one of his illegals shot two cops on Monday. Mike Rogers joins us now, the congressman from Michigan, who wants to be the next senator from Michigan to fill that open seat. As the primary nears in August, he is way out in front with 30% of the vote in the last primary poll. That was May 22nd to May 23rd. Second place is Sandy Pensler. Third is Justin Hamash, a libertarian from years past. Mike Rogers, welcome back.
Brian, it's always good to be back.
So how's been the gap? First off, before we get into specifics, what's it been like you grinding it out in Michigan?
Listen, the Michiganders are fired up. They understand the importance of this election. And, you know, they're a pretty simple bunch. They want the border secure. They want their groceries to be affordable. They don't want biological males competing against women. They are not outrageous here across the state of Michigan And they want jobs and opportunity, and they want the government to stop telling them what kind of car to buy, how to cook their food, and how to heat their hot water. I mean, it is pretty basic stuff, and that's where I think the Democrats have just gotten so discombobulated on where they're at. And people completely saw through this sham trial in New York. I mean, I can't find very few people who believe that wasn't the government trying to go after a political opponent. And I think that let's hope that holds, but I think this is going to backfire on Democrats all over the country.
Well, money-wise, it definitely is. I mean, there's 20-30% of the new donors to President Trump are first-time donors. Do you believe that? You have the billionaire class over in Silicon Valley. He's got about, President Biden or any Democrat would have 95% of it. It's down to about 80%, according to Joel Gasparino. David Sachs is leading the charge for people to raise money for Donald Trump because they cannot take the economy the way it's going. And also, I think it's important, too, Elon Musk is now on board. He said, President Trump says, I want this guy as an advisor. I mean, he's under attack from this administration. You realize that, right? If they can go after Trump and Elon Musk, we have no shot, Mike Rogers.
Oh, completely. And that's where I think people view it. And they say, wow, if that guy gets the Department of Justice after them, you know, what most normal citizens with normal budgets, you know, that's why they invented the plea deal, right? They got to go in and say, I can't even afford to defend myself. That's why I think the Democrats miss this. People do view this as a government that is way out of control, and it looks more like, a Soviet Union and the way they deal with their political opponents than it does America. And they know they're next, right? The local DA can go after them for a local issue, a local business issue, a local crime that they probably didn't commit. And so you go through this process, and I think people are waking up to this big, massive federal government that is too big.
Right.
It is now decided it knows how to live your life than you do. And I think people are going to push back on this. That's why you see donors saying that or, voting with their checkbook. And I think you have voters of all these traditional Democrat coalitions saying, hey, wait a minute, none of this looks right. And it certainly isn't working for me. I got to take out a loan every month to buy my groceries. And it's getting serious, Brian. One quick one. I talked to a pastor last week who runs a pantry. He went from 200 to over 400 per week families who come in to get a little extra help at the extra month to pay their food bill. And he said, I've never seen anything like it. And that happened over the last 8 or 9 months. And he said, these are people who are working for a living. They're just their budgets can't get stretched that far. They are getting crushed by this. This is not something that isn't impacting regular people trying to keep up and do the right thing.
Absolutely. And by the way, on the Trump trial, I thought this is interesting. Eli Honig, I found myself watching him a lot because he seemed to be fair. He's on CNN, senior legal analyst. He's having a war now with Andrew Weissman because he came out and said, among other things, he took Bragg to task for bringing in an ill-conceived, unjustified mess of a case against the ex-president. The charges against Trump aren't just unusual. They were unprecedented. Then when the jury came out with their statements, they said they bespoke, seemingly crafted individually, this case for the former president, nobody else. Here, prosecutors got their man, for now at least, but they also contorted the law in an unprecedented manner in their quest to snare their prey. And now Andrew Weissman and everyone are going after Eli Honig. Now, it's almost like watching the team you're about to play fight in the locker room. So I'm wondering, there's some people that just understand the law and aren't comfortable with it. It's just as if you play football and just hate the way they're doing to the game, even if your team wins. That's what it seems like to me for some people who are students of the law.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many reversible errors in this case. I honestly believe, and thankfully there are a few lawyers, I hate to say honest lawyers, my dad would roll over in his grave, but I will tell you that there are some lawyers out there who are Democrats who are saying, wait a minute, none of this looks right. And that ought to be the first clue for everybody, number one. And number two, they did contort it. I mean, you can't go through the list of very obvious things. The judge was a Biden guy. The Biden administration sent a lawyer from DOJ to work on the case, right? He resigns a very prestigious job from Department of Justice to go to work on this case in New York City. There's, in the FBI, we would call that a clue, right? They just set this thing up And Biden's already using it in fundraising. He's calling him, you know, he's a convicted felon. Everybody a felon. You should be afraid of your, you know, the future of the country. I'm afraid for the future of the country because they're doing this very kind of thing. I think they don't even mind if it gets overturned because it'll happen after the election. They served their purpose. Imagine putting someone through the weight of a government trial where the end result is taking away your liberty or taking your property and just being so nonchalant about the fact that they're going to use that in a political forum. Or, you know, let's extrapolate it. The DA decides he doesn't like another business owner in New York City because they donated to a cause they don't believe in. Is that what's next? I mean, this is really, we should be terrified about what they have set the Justice Department up at all levels to do to political opponents. And I bravo for lawyers who are Democrats who have the courage to come out and say, this is not right. If we break down this system, Brian, there is no other system in the world that works as well as this one. And if we've gotten this thing so broken that it's going after political opponents, we are in some deep trouble.
I want to bring it to somebody. By the way, when I speak to Doc Rogers, I'm talking to a guy who spent a career in the FBI as well as on the Senate Select, the House Select Intelligence Committee. So you're unbelievably experienced, as well as traveling around the globe to compare it to other legal systems. I want to bring you to what happened with COVID-19, because this could be happening again. And what bothers me most is not mistakes that people made, was they won't even acknowledge it, or they tell you something didn't happen that you know did. So listen to Congressman Rich McCormick, who's a doctor and was treating people, even though he's a rookie, first year or second year in the House. He's trying to get another two, a military guy. This is what he said, and he was brimming with anger in addressing Anthony Fauci yesterday, cut 10.
You believed an institutional should make it hard for people to live their lives so they'd feel pressured to get vaccinated. Could we run the audio clip on that, please?
You think can be done about it? I have to say that I don't see a big solution other than some sort of mandatory vaccination.
You want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Big corporations like Amazon and Facebook and all of those others are going to say, you want to work for us, you get vaccinated. And it's been proven that when you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological and they get vaccinated.
That's exactly the thuggish behavior that divided this country that he would deny on camera, but he was actually implementing behind the scenes. They kept masks on five-year-olds, kept kids out of school for a six-feet law that dates back to 1918 that's not based in fact in this virus, kept masks on people outside or playing sporting events. That thuggish behavior was something he denied doing. Then he's caught on a book on tape doing it. Your thoughts about what we all live through and what you need to come out of hearings like this.
Listen, if we don't come out of this and have an honest shakeup about what they did wrong and how these folks like Fauci came out and said, you must do these things. And think of Americans never been through this. They're thinking, OK, well, I guess that's right. Right. Somebody's mandating I have to take a vaccine. I guess that's right. No choice. Oh, by the way, could lose my job. And the government co-opted huge amounts of corporations to say, if you don't, this is a consequence, and the consequence isn't good. That is coercion at its worst. And so I think we have to come out of this and understand that we're finding out maybe the vaccines weren't had the level of efficacy that people were telling us they did, and did have adverse effects that people needed to make their own decision if that was worth it for them. They never got that chance. They never got that choice, including members of the military. And so, I listen, if we don't come out of this and say this, how dumb most of the things that happened were and how the information was wrong. I mean, I remember going through this, Brian, when they said, oh, my God, whatever you do, don't wear masks because those masks are in short supply. They need to be in hospitals. Then they said, okay, well, wear masks. Then they said, okay, well, by the way, if you don't wear a mask, we're going to put you in jail or you won't be able to buy food at the grocery store. I mean, it went 180 degrees. I'm still not sure if you're supposed to be wearing a mask or not. Who knows? They need to do a deep dive and be honest about the consequences of this. And, you know, listen, I feel bad for young Americans. They lost, 2 years of their high school experience or 2 years of their college experience, and they ain't ever getting that back. And that has had a tremendous impact on these young Americans trying to figure out what, you know, what's right in America and what's wrong in America.
So you're in a tough race. When you get the nomination, it seems inevitable. You're going to be going against Congresswoman Slotkin, right?
Yeah.
So she's in the last poll that I saw, and it's within the margin of error. She's up 2 in the Emerson poll. That was in April. In the May poll in the Mitchell Mitchell research, she's up 4. That was in May. So obviously this thing is winnable for you. What's it going to take to go over the top in Michigan and convince that purple state that you're the answer?
So a lot of things. One, A, we're going to make sure that you can afford your grocery bill at the end of the month. B, we're going to make sure the government does not tell you how to live your life. These EV mandates are a disaster in Michigan. And candidly, she has a very liberal voting record. People just don't know it. I mean, she runs around the state saying, hey, I'm for you, and then goes back and votes like she, you know, represents California. And so we just have to get our message out about those differences.
Okay.
We're going to talk about crime. We're going to talk about the border and what it's done to our state. 3,000 people died of fentanyl. And here's the best part of this, Brian. I have a solution for all of it. It's not just about being angry. Angry right. cannot be our destination as conservatives. It has to be our starting line so that we go back and fix these problems.
But Mike Rogers, quick thing, because we only have a minute left. But you can't be the ultra-conservative. It's not like you're Oklahoma or Nebraska. You have to understand, you have to reflect the people of Michigan. And that's what I believe Larry Hogan's doing in Maryland. He came out and said, respect the verdict. He knows he's in a very blue state, but he's got a chance to win that seat. Here's what Larry Trump said about Larry Hogan.
He said, quote, regardless of the result, I urge all Americans to respect the verdict and the legal process. That is not the Republican Party line at the moment. And in fact, he was attacked by the top Trump advisor, Chris LaCivita, who wrote that he, quote, just ended your campaign, end quote. Does the Republican National Committee support Larry Hogan for Senate?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I don't support what he just said there. I think it's ridiculous. And I think anybody who's
So just real quick. I don't think he said anything wrong for the people of Maryland. He said, respect the verdict, not Trump is guilty. Your thoughts?
Listen, I think every senator candidate has to reflect the people that they're trying to represent. I just think that's critically important. I think the most important thing we can do is take control of the United States Senate and give Chuck Schumer a pink slip for his majority leader job if you care about the future of the country. I mean, we've added more debt in the last 3.5 years, Brian, than the entire 230 years. That debt has caused grocery prices to be higher. So you say, well, you sound like I'm from Nebraska. Maybe so. But I will tell you that the people on the ground in Michigan are changing where they're at.
I hope so.
Solutions for their problems.
John James got close a couple of times, too. I think Mike Rogers, with his experience, could be the difference. Mike Rogers, best of luck. Thanks so much.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. It's great to be with you today. Eli Beer is coming up shortly, founder and president of Friends of the United States, Hatzalah Inc., and he's our Israel's largest all-volunteer emergency medical response organization. He's going to give us an idea of what's happening on the ground. Also, we're watching the latest with Attorney General Garland in front of the Weaponization of Government Committee, trying to explain himself on how Donald Trump is not the victim of the weaponization of his Justice Department. I'm not buying it. Also, he will not release the transcript of the Robert Hur testimony. Why not? Why can't we hear the audio tapes? You gave us the transcript, but evidently you have admitted to cleaning it up. The explanation to not give it up is, get this, because he's afraid they'll use the president's voice and have evil things done with it with AI. Really? The president's voice could be used every day with AI. Quick note, if you want to see me on stage, and I know you do, History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour, Indianapolis, Indiana, coming up on June 29th and July 28th in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. Meet and greet opportunities, too. I could talk to you before the show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Let's sell it out. We're almost there. Don't move.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think that they're a lot closer than they were a few months ago. I still think Hamas political and military leadership exists largely whole. A lot of their combat formations have been destroyed, but I think Hamas has been significantly attrited.
So he believes they should be downgraded, but nobody believes Hamas has been eradicated. Yet this president wants to have a 6 month treat or a 6 week ceasefire, and thousands of prisoners could be let out of Israeli prisons. They're there for a reason. In exchange for, we're missing 120 at least hostages, many of which sadly have lost their lives already. And guess who lives? Most of the nucleus and higher ups in Hamas. Who on their right mind thinks that's acceptable to Israel? Eli Beer is here, founder and president of Friends of Hatzalah, Inc. He's Israel's largest all-volunteer emergency medical response organization, whose son is fighting in the IDF, who lives in both places, America and Israel, dual citizenship. Great to see you, Eli.
Great to be with you.
All right, just a little closer to the microphone would be great. First off, your thoughts about this, what you know about the bare-bones framework of this would-be ceasefire. Do you think it's a good move? And what about the people of Israel that you know of?
Well, I think majority of Israel agree that in order to have a ceasefire, you need to at least have three things coming out of this terrible war that was enforced on us. First thing, we need our hostages back. All the live ones and, of course, us are the ones who are not alive. Every single one of them. But the next thing we need is eliminate the entire heads of Hamas, including the leadership. Everyone. Everyone has to be eliminated. We have to do the same job the United States did in 1945 in Europe. They eliminated Hitler and everyone else that was surrounding him. When Hitler felt like this is it, he went in and committed suicide. That's what we need to cause, Sinwar and his friends.
How many are left? Most of the higher-ups are there. I know you've killed a lot of Hamas leaders.
Well, I think the top leadership is, of course, Mohammed Def is number two. He's now number two to Sinwar.
Is he in a wheelchair?
We don't know. He's hiding himself. For many years, he's like a rat in a little tunnel. And he's just an evil, evil human being. He's like a terrible person who's all his whole life was all about killing people. These are people that I saw in my own lives in restaurants, bombed to pieces, in buses, in hotels, in a Passover hotel. He planned the whole thing. This guy lives in Gaza inside a tunnel. And if God forbid this ceasefire comes in before these people are eliminated and killed, when the question is not if it's going to happen again, the question is when it's going to happen and how bigger it's going to happen. Right now we had 235 hostages. If God forbid they get a ceasefire and the stolen power, we're going to have 1,500 or 2,000, 5,000 hostages.
They'll come back. If they survive, they win.
They win, but then they realize that they are stronger than the United States. They realize that these terrible, I don't have to describe a word for them, but they realize that if they won this battle, meaning they're staying alive after what they did, the atrocities they did in October 7th, these guys are going to Europe, and then they're going to Canada, and then they're coming here to the United States.
And I'll tell you what, it's all Iran, and yet we are doing everything we can to bring Iran, I guess, into some type of nuclear deal when they're within a whisker of having a nuclear weapon. It's insane. If this is the prime minister being held back by the United States from going into full bore into Rafah, are we changing the way you're fighting in Rafah?
Well, let me tell you something. Last few weeks, I'm very, very proud that IDF, the government of Israel and prime minister decided to go into Rafah, although every single smart person in the world who was sitting in their vacation chairs or golfing are telling us not to go into Rafah.
And your son is one of them.
My son is an incredible young boy. He's 20 years old, my only son. And him and his friends are fighting in there. And my son lost his best friends there already. He's 7 months straight inside Gaza. And he said Rafah is a place that every single building they're going into, they're finding ammunition. Everywhere, they're finding remains of Israelis. They found tunnels everywhere, tunnels that are going between Rafah and Egypt that wasn't touched. Egypt promised to destroy these tunnels 7 months ago. They didn't do a thing. This is this is something that has to be investigated by the United States. Why did Egypt not take care of their responsibilities? My son is there with his friends, the special forces. These are like the Delta Force of Israel. My son's not afraid. He's 20 years old. This kid, 8 years ago, was playing PlayStation all day and eating pizza. This guy is a hero of Israel together with his friends. And they say, let us fight to get Israel's security back.
So Egypt knew about these tunnels. You can't say, well, these are renegade organizations. We don't know what they were doing on the border. You think the Egyptian government knew about these tunnels?
I definitely think Egypt is in it. Egypt was so angry that Israel went into Rafah and they said, we're not going to give any humanitarian aid anymore if Israel controls the other side. For the only reason is because
they're about to be exposed.
Look, they have the Suez Canal, which they make a lot of money. This was another way of making money. All these tunnels that were transporting prostitutes from Gaza into Egypt and back and forth, transporting food and luxury cars, watches. These guys had everything in Gaza.
These are huge tunnels.
Huge
tunnels. Trucks are moving through this.
These guys from Egypt knew everything. They were making fortunes. Billions of dollars were coming in from Qatar and Iran and other countries, and they needed to get goods, including hundreds of thousands of missiles and bullets and ammunition and RPGs that went through these tunnels. They didn't just drop from the sky. They came from Egypt. That there is no way Egypt didn't know about it. And that's why Egypt is so upset. Why is Israel taking over Rafah? Because a lot of people will lose big businesses they have now with the transports.
So, by the way, we're talking to Eli Beer, founder and president of Friends of United Hatzalah, Israel's largest all-volunteer emergency medical response organization. Not only are you fighting in the south, you're fighting in the north. Hezbollah is bombing daily. You got thousands of Israelis forced to live out of their homes because of the danger from their rockets. That's something that's got to be addressed. But I want you to hear what Robin O'Brien said about this peace deal that was brought up and then what happens after. Robert O'Brien, as you know, has probably gotten more hostages out than any modern American diplomat, and he'll play a prominent role should Donald Trump win again. Former National Security Advisor, Cut 42.
It removes Israel from the population centers and lets Sinwar and Hamas, just like Baghdadi and ISIS were running the ISIS caliphate. It allows Sinwar and Hamas to run the Gaza. And then the cherry on the cake, and you'll get a kick out of this, it requires the American taxpayers to spend billions of dollars to rebuild Gaza after Hamas attacked Israel. I mean, it's the whole thing's insane.
Are you aware of that? That we're supposed to pay? The United States is supposed to pay to rebuild Gaza?
I don't get how, when someone comes over me for a donation for a school or anything, I make sure the school is aligned with my ideology. How does America give billions of dollars?
Always. To a group? Trump stopped it.
To a group of terrorists who say this clearly, and they say, just look in their bylaws and their website. America's next. How could you give them billions of dollars? If Iran wants to give them billions of dollars, let them find a way to give them billions of dollars. We should not let them. We should not let Qatar give them billions of dollars. Qatar and their all this Al Jazeera bullshit that they have, they created for their propaganda. Qatar is sponsoring the biggest terrorist groups in the world, including Al-Qaeda. In 2001. And these guys are now giving money. America should not give money to Gaza. There was plenty of, they have 140 countries who love Gaza. America is the only country who actually is aligned with Israel. Let them stick to Israel.
How about these tunnels? As you discover them, are they being blown up?
These tunnels that my son and his friends are discovering are getting blown up by the IDF. A lot of these soldiers are getting killed because they're trying so hard not to get civilians hurt. And the civilians are surrounded everywhere. The Hamas purposely put them everywhere. You see, when usually we go to war, like even between Russia and Ukraine, most of the civilians just run away. Hamas do not want the civilians run away. They want their babies to be there. They want the children and women to lay down there. So when
And you found gun, your son found guns under the kids' beds, right, when you go into these homes?
The beds, the children beds, underneath them, they have RPGs. In the rooms, they have books, like cartoon books about killing Jews. These are homes in Gaza. The education starts from age zero, literally. Nursing the baby to hate Jewish people. And I just want to say something that may sound like this might be the World War through against the World War III against the Jews. You're talking about countries like Iran, like Qatar. I really think Qatar is in it, definitely, because they're sponsoring all this for many, many years.
Well, they house Hamas's leadership, don't they?
Of course. There they give him 5-star plus. They get a massage every day on Qatar's expense. These guys are getting sponsored by Qatar to keep fighting. How could you let the biggest terrorists in the world just walk around your cities if you don't support them? I can't see the U.S. allowing the heads of Al-Qaeda walking around here, Fifth Avenue. Now, these countries, and I'm talking about Yemen, I'm talking about Syria, I'm talking about Lebanon, that America gives hundreds of millions of dollars through, if not billions of dollars, are allowing Hezbollah to just attack us for no reason. We have no property. We have no occupation in Lebanon.
They're just rocketing you daily.
Rocketing daily. I'm wondering, why are we bombing down their airports? Why are we letting Lebanon live a regular life when hundreds of thousands of Israelis cannot live in their homes because Hezbollah, who are sponsored by Iran, are bombing buildings and people and cars in the north of Israel.
How many people are displaced, Eli?
Hundreds of thousands. Over 150,000 are now, and now they're even making it wider towards Nahariya and other cities. We in United Hatzalah are dealing now not only with medical issues of injuries and illnesses and heart attacks. We have now thousands of people who are emotionally in the most terrible way, Holocaust survivors, 90-year-old Holocaust survivors. Yesterday, we had a 97-year-old Holocaust survivor who collapsed at home. He had no medical thing. He couldn't move. He was in a post-traumatic stress. This is his second Holocaust he's going through. A 97-year-old man. You know, I'm an American. I remember my father's stories. He lived here in the Lower East Side when he was a little kid. They were begging the U.S. then to go in and bomb all the in Auschwitz and all the other concentration camp. It took years for the Americans to wake up. I am saying the American administration, the U.S. government, the president has to wake up now and support one incredible liberal country that's aligned with the U.S.
So you're talking, you're 100% right, but he cares about his electoral fortunes, and he feels like he's going to lose Michigan, the Palestinian population there. You say one of the biggest disappointments is fighting in Gaza. This is what your guys tell you and your son relays. And knowing that we have lukewarm support from America.
I want to say America was with us from the beginning of the war. But once it started getting messy, America was going one day here, one day here.
Of course,
you can't.
Terrible.
You know, I'm just telling you a thing that no one really realizes. Gaza, Hamas, which are ISIS, which are Al-Qaeda, the same exact organization, same different name. They have over 100 countries who love them and support them, which starting with China, Russia, North Korea, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and many other countries around the world, Venezuela, our neighbors here, and Cuba, and many countries who hate America, who support Gaza. There is one country in the world who actually are aligned with Israel, who believe in the same values. That's the United States of America. That's why I'm so proud to be an American. And all of a sudden now that only one country one day comes for us and the other day comes against us. We need to have this country with Israel on this side of the table. Like I heard yesterday, Vice President Pence, he was saying something really interesting. You know, they always wanted America to be the negotiator, the fair negotiator. America should never be the fair negotiator between us and Hamas.
Right.
America should be on our side. You want to get a fair negotiator? Find someone from Switzerland. He could be a fair negotiator. They are no one's side.
Is it a big deal that is it Norway, Spain, and Ireland recognize Gaza, a two-state solution, or the Palestinian state?
Well, it's interesting that this became like when I just said the third world war against the Jews. This time, the whole world is against the Jews. This is a war against the Jews. Ireland, a country that has nothing to do with this conflict.
I know.
and they decided to align with.
What is the second state? Do they have any idea the history of the negotiations, how many opportunities the Palestinians had? There's no interest there. You ask Hamas, they don't want a two-state solution. They're forcing a two-state solution on people who know nothing about the region. The people in the region know there's no such thing as a two-state solution.
And what is Venezuela? I'm just, you know, they have their own trouble. They have nothing to eat there because their government is the most corrupt government in the Americas. They are supporting Hamas. Good. All these countries like Ireland, like who are your friends? You could see who you are. And this is what's going on. That's why I'm calling upon America. President Biden did a lot of great things for Israel. Just wake up and support Israel entirely.
If you don't have a friend in bad times, why have a friend? Listen, Eli, you're doing great things. If people want to give to United Hatzalah, how would they do it?
United Hatzalah, it's easy. Go on our website, IsraelRescue.org. We're buying more medical supplies. We're getting ready for the biggest battle, which I think didn't even start, which is Lebanon, Hezbollah. We're really worried about what's going to happen in the last few days. It's intense like never was in the last 7-8 months. So we are getting ready to buy more bulletproof vests, the ones I'm wearing now. More medical supplies, more equipment to make sure every single person in Israel is safer, no matter if they're Jewish or not. By the way, we save Arabs and Jews, Muslims and Christians
every
alike.
Day. Thanks so much. Eli, I really appreciate what you're doing. You have our full support here. Eli Beer, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
These attacks have not, and they will not, influence our decision-making. I view contempt as a serious matter, but I will not jeopardize the ability of our prosecutors and agents to do their jobs effectively in future investigations. I will not be intimidated. And the Justice Department will not be intimidated. We will continue to do our jobs free from political influence, and we will not back down from defending democracy.
That was Merrick Garland's opening statement. He's taking some hits, direct hits. He has no answers that I could see. I'm watching on Fox Nation while I'm doing the show, doing these interviews, and I'm also watching our network. And that is Merrick Garland. He's testifying today in front of the Committee to the Weaponization of Government. And we can't answer the question effectively. Why will he not release the tapes that Robert Hur recorded in his interview with Joe Biden that led him to believe the President of the United States should not be prosecuted for taking classified documents, even though they're at the highest level over the course of decades, because he had a bad memory and was old and be sympathetic to a jury? So they said, well, read it. But by the way, I read the transcripts. They make the president look awful. Awful. I don't know. I just said, I'm just going to read this whole thing and get an understanding of it. But they want to hear the tapes. He won't let them hear tapes because he's afraid of being used as a operation material for AI. And then he says, the transcript's good enough. And I'm going to stand up for the Department of Justice. What is that? How does that make sense?
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.